Hello, everyone. Hello, Teach Better family. My name is Katie Miglin, and I have the pleasure of being with Joshua Stamper today to talk through some SEL and how to support our students in our classrooms. And so we're going to get started in just about 30 seconds. So sit tight. Hello, my name is Katie Miglin, and I am with the Teach Better team. And today we're going to talk with Joshua Stamper on some strategies on how you can build a trauma-sensitive classroom. And hopefully, these strategies are things that you can implement almost immediately in your classroom and make you more aware of some things you're doing with your kids. So, Josh, welcome. So excited we get to do this together.
Thank you, Giddy. I appreciate you so much kind of being the MC today for this session with Remote edX. I'm so excited to talk about the strategies, the five strategies to build a trauma-sensitive classroom.
Yes. And if you have not had an opportunity to check out one of our Remote edX kind of little tips and tricks videos that we've had out about monthly, these are meant to provide just kind of quick tips that of different things that you can take back to your schools and your classroom. But it is all with the Remote edX grant that we are working with in Ohio. We work with about 16 ESCs together to come with one mission, which is just supporting educators throughout the state of Ohio. But luckily enough for you all get to benefit from this. So this is all through grant funding, and we'll kind of talk about some of that later, about how you can bring Teach Better into your schools or into your districts using some grant money. But today, Josh, we're going to focus specifically on trauma-informed practices, but also what does that look like when you're in your classroom? Some things we can do because we know once those, kids come in, bell rings, you hit the ground running, and sometimes you're just reacting and not always thinking through what you should be doing. So I'm excited to have this conversation because I think it is super essential to kind of the everyday educator.
Yeah, so I want to start off with just kind of defining a trauma-sensitive classroom because I think that's going to be our baseline and just allowing people to understand how prevalent it is within schools. There are plenty of companies that have done a lot of research. I love using Echo. It's a company out in the United Kingdom, and they just do a phenomenal job of really taking on data and presenting it in a really easy way. And what they have found is that 70% of students across the world have at least one form of trauma. And I think that's really heavy for a lot of educators to understand that it is actually really prevalent in our classrooms. It's the majority, not the minority. And so, with that, I think it's just something that we have to have in the forefront of our minds at all times when we're working with students and behavior specifically to understand that a lot of our kids have gone through just some atrocious things in their lives. They have gone through not only traumatic situations, but chronic stress, where it's something that's constant within their lives and is affecting their biology. And so, I really like to kind of start with that just so that folks understand just that it's something that's occurring in our students' lives every single day. You may not see it from the outside, but it's there, and they're really just in this survival mode every single day. And a lot of times, education is not something that they're really focused on. Some of the essentials that they need, maybe it's neglect, maybe it's abuse. There's a lot of forms of trauma that our kids are going through. And I just like having at least a few strategies that I can present for folks to understand that, they need to have some type of tactics and procedures in the classroom to work with students with trauma.
Well, Josh, I think you brought up you said a specific statistic, but just the idea that trauma is a majority, not a minority, is honestly kind of shocking in and of itself. And I know you and I have had conversations. We recently were in Texas and you were presenting on this. And I think what we often think trauma looks like isn't what we actually see. And I think that's really important too. We literally everyone in the world just got off of COVID. That it of itself was some level of trauma because our lives were disrupted. And whether, you know, we think that our kids live this picture perfect life where they were baking cookies and banana bread every day at home with two parents who were active, it doesn't matter because it still impacted their life. You know, it was still something in the media, still something we all were impacted by. So I think that statistic, honestly, is just so shocking just to know that there's a lot of trauma that is very hidden in our classrooms. And so sometimes when we hear these trauma sensitive classrooms, I know I was an educator who would sit in these trainings and think, this doesn't apply to most of my kids. Well, that's not the case. And it's important to know that, that really the things you're going to share today can be applied to all students because all students could benefit from them.
Yeah, Katie, you make a great point. And honestly, those statistics are only going up. You know, the, what I just mentioned was pre-pandemic. And right now, data is coming out as far as just the amount of abuse that happened, how many much like divorce has increased since the pandemic. I mean, all that time together, locked in a home. I mean, obviously, you know, you can't escape that. And some of the things that you may have been able to get out of only increased during that time. So I'm curious to see kind of what the aftermath of the pandemic was and what those numbers are, but I would assume that it's only going to go up.
Right. Right. So when we look at kind of some things that we can do, I know that there are hundreds and billions and trillions of different articles you can read, and it almost becomes overwhelming, but you have kind of narrowed it down to some five like simple strategies that you can do. So where should we even start?
Yeah. So I really wanted to be simple, keep it simple, right? So predictable and consistent practices. I wanted to start there. I think when we think of a student with trauma and the fact that they don't really get to choose their environment, a lot of things are happening without their control. And so, you know, what can we do to create an environment that they know they are safe in and that's predictable for them? So they're used to chaos and unpredictability. So what can we do to make it consistent for them in the classroom? So for instance, you know, making sure, and I'm going to give an example. I had a wonderful teacher, a science teacher in my last campus who every single day she was at the door, she was given a smile, she was either given a hug, she was high-fiving, she was doing something. And we all know the statistics, right? 40% increase engagement if you are just greeting at the door. So she did that every single day. Then she also did a little song and mantra for a classroom, and there was hand motions and there was a song. The kids loved it. It was a bunch of sixth graders. And then in addition to that, she did brain breaks every single class. She also did a relationship activity. So the kids got to know each other and her. And that was something that was consistent every single day. And her behaviors were not out of control. I never had to go to her classroom for anything. And I think one of those things was that she had a predictable schedule. She had these things that were consistent every single day. The kids absolutely loved her class. And science can be a tough subject for students. And, you know, the grades were always high. I thought also something that she did really, really well was a two-step transition. And what she would always do is that if there was something that was going to be a hard task for the students, she always would do some intermediate activity prior to. And I'll give you an example, maybe for elementary. Let's say the students are going out to recess. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're pretty amped up. They're wound up. They're hyper. They come in and let's say they need to take a quiz. Well, instead of just saying, hey, sit down, get your pencil out, and we're going to take a quiz, you have a transition activity. So maybe it's coloring a picture. So they're getting some of their materials out. They're still active, but at a slower rate. And then that also is helping them get the behavior that you're seeking and that momentum into what will be the task, which is a quiz. And I think if we're intentional about our transitions, I think that will kind of help with the predictability and the consistent practices that we need.
Okay. So being mindful of transitions, but also providing the structure, which is honestly helpful for adults too. I mean, it's really helpful for everybody. So, you know, I think that's, it's a kind of an easy thing. And sometimes we think we're being, you know, I remember being like a younger teacher and thinking like, oh, I want kids to just like not anticipate, but just participate and kind of be in the moment. But really we find that's not really how minds work best. They need the structure. They need to know what's coming, but then also providing that time for the transition to happen in a natural way is also super valuable. So, okay. That one's easy enough. Be mindful of transitions and structure. Okay. What else?
All right, so establish a safe classroom. And I kind of mentioned this before, but there's a couple ways. I'm going to give you three different strategies that we implemented on our campus to kind of help with the safe classroom environment. So one being a relationship agreement. So if you ever heard me speak before, I talk about this a lot because it's something that I've seen firsthand that has worked really, really well because it's giving power to the student, right? So if they, again, don't have control of their life, we're allowing them to have this control here. And that is that they get to determine with positive language how they're going to treat each other, the teacher, and how the teacher is going to treat them. And okay. So what we do is we ask them, and there's a lot of different ways to survey the students, but we're trying to really gain 5, 6, 7 main points that everyone is consistently placing down on their feedback form. And then we're trying to then place it onto a piece of paper, poster, whatnot, so it's visible for the students. And then, of course, you can do something like the whole class signs it or something mm-hmm. where they're all agreeing to the relationship agreement. This allows the students to have that ownership about the classroom. And it's not classroom rules, but it's just mm-hmm. how they're going to treat one another. And then it's something that you're constantly referring to. It's visible. And then also, it's not set in stone. It's something that can be manipulated and changed mm-hmm. as the year goes on. So a lot of times students are very honest and they'll tell you exactly what needs to happen in the classroom. And so if that's brought up, then the teacher has the opportunity to go back to the relationship agreement and see if the entire class feels the same way. And if it's something that they agree upon, then you can add it to it. And what I love is that the students eventually get to the point where they start to take control of others and saying like, hey, you're not doing what the relationship agreement says. You know, we need to start paying attention to the teacher, fill in the blank, whatever the behavior is. So relationship agreement is huge in regards to creating a safe classroom environment because everyone knows what's going on, what's expected in that classroom. Mm-hmm. And that goes kind of back to the consistency piece. Then the regular classroom meetings or check-ins is huge because what that allows is the teacher is able to kind of gain insight on where the student is prior to the lesson. And there's a lot of fun ways you can do this. Sometimes it was just as easy as a 1 to 10 rate, right? Mm-hmm. So like 1 being the worst day, 10 being the best. Where do you fall? Well, if a student's at a 2, you're going to treat that student a little bit different if they were right. an 8 or a 9.
Right.
And that just kind of gives you an idea of where they're at. Or, you know, some of my teachers were even more advanced and they would have Google forms that they would fill out. So they understood, okay, maybe it's a resource piece of, oh, I didn't eat last night. If mm-hmm. I could have a snack right now, I think I'd be more successful. Or, you know what? I don't feel like learning because my parents were fighting all last night. And yep. I would rather go to a counselor right now to kind of work through that before getting into a lesson. So mm-hmm. those check-ins really gave some clear information about what's going on with our students that our teachers wouldn't be privy to if they didn't do something that allowed the student to feel safe enough to share what resources they need. And the last thing I'd share is just recognizing the positive behavior as much as you can.
Okay.
A lot of times in education, a student will hear the word no about 1,000 times in a day. So yeah. What is it that we can amplify and being helpful? And I talked about that science teacher. That was something that she was marvelous at. She would constantly throughout the entire lesson, just shout out praises of all the different things the kids were doing. And it could be something as simple as just sitting down in their seat to sharpening their pencil at the appropriate time. So whatever the small little pieces were, she was constantly giving helpful and like wonderful praise for just the smallest things. And I honestly felt like the culture in that classroom changed just because there was so much positive language that was constantly being used.
Okay. That was kind of a lot within one strategy, but the comments are amazing. Andrea is talking about a Google form. And this, I thought, was really interesting that you shared this, because I remember doing something like this, but something so simple that I, just thought of as you were sharing is if you teach students that have phones on them, creating a QR code on your board, they come in and scan it. And as you're kind of getting class settled, they quickly fill out maybe 5 questions, something as simple, like, how are you, rate yourself. And it's such an easy way to get information you wouldn't get if you just asked them to tell you, because we know kids are kids and they don't necessarily want to share things out loud, or it's hard for them to put in words. The same thing it is for adults. We struggle to sometimes be honest with somebody else when they ask. And so this gives them an opportunity to like be open and share. And then what you can do and how you can approach that student. And I, just like something simple as positive positive feedback. Like, we all could use positive feedback, but those are just such little things that can make such a big difference in kind of that general creating a safe space. So I absolutely love those. Those are, if nothing else, just great reminders. You know, maybe it's not necessarily new information, but great reminders on how you can set up that culture where a student feels accepted in your classroom, in your space. Okay, Josh, you're 2 for 2. Are you going to be able to maintain this for 3 more strategies?
No promises, but I'm going to try my best.
Okay, number 3, what do you recommend?
All right, teaching the actual calming down strategies. So for instance, our students that go through chronic stress or trauma in their life, a lot of times don't know how to go through adverse situations. So for example, let's say 2 kids are running around the track during PE and one kid calls another kid a name. Well, you know, a lot of times our students have, and this is probably like 90% of our kids, know how to deal with that situation and can successfully, you know, move on. Now, for those who have trauma in their life, you know, they may not have those calming down strategies. So that may result in the kid being physical with the other student, or maybe they're cussing them out, you know, some negative behavior toward the other student. And so what we would do is we'd not only provide some coaching on other things like social skills, but also with calming down strategies. And so just some of those things was like breathing exercises, meditation, you know, okay, if you feel this way, you might need some oxygen to the brain. So, you know, maybe to get some movement, go get some water, you know, finding ways for them to, you know, understand that they can do things a little bit different, right? And of course, we would give them passes to go see the counselor and see the administration. But with that, we also provided with our teachers, you know, for those who maybe have ADHD, a student with an ice pack, holding that actually calms them down. Noise canceling headphones for those who have sensory needs. Yeah. We would have cool down areas built within the classroom. So it was a safe space for that child. Typically it was something that was not completely barricaded, but kind of gave a little bit of privacy for that student. It was comfy. And then also we found ways for gratitude journals and times for reflection for the student in quiet spaces. And then we also got out of the box with classroom pets. So we had anywhere from lizards, snakes to dogs. So whatever the preference was, we would really try to hone in on that. And we had students that we saw a lot of behavior issues in some classes without the pets, and a totally different child that was calm and focused with the classroom pets. So there's a lot of research on that also, but I would say that, you know, if you don't have permission, obviously that's something that you need to look into. But for us, we were very successful with bringing in some nice friends into the classroom to help with classroom behavior. And it really did a great job of calming students down.
That's so fun. That's so awesome. You know, it's interesting that you say that students don't always have the calming strategies, or they don't know what to do. And I think sometimes we forget that sometimes it's not modeled for them outside of the school. And, you know, and especially if we're not always modeling it, or, you know, we're losing our cool with other students, we're not always showing them how to handle situations well. And maybe there's not a lot of adults that can handle it the way it's supposed to be, or, you know, the appropriate, take the appropriate steps. So it's important to be strategic of how you teach it and to give them multiple options. You know, I know there are plenty of people that are like, take the deep breaths. And I was always the kid that was like, this isn't working, you know? So being mindful that kids need different things and giving them kind of the menu of options that for whatever works for them in that moment is really important. So
well, and for that too, Katie, we would always kind of trick them. I mean, sometimes our students were so escalated that if you told them, oh, just calm down and breathe, right, you know, you probably would get a pretty bad response. So we would have them blow bubbles or do some imaginary thing like blowing on soup and whatnot. So I think you make a great point too, in the fact that, like, especially in secondary, some of the kids that we're working with look like adults. I mean, mm-hmm. they have facial hair. They're much taller than I am. And so we just assume that they have these strategies. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's not the case. And so if they're not getting it at home, then where else are they going to learn these things? Of course, for the school, it's important that we teach these calming down strategies.
Well, and it's, they may not have someone shown them, but they also may not how to use them in the moment. You know, they could probably have heard the teacher talk about it, but then, and you know, like Andrew said in the comments too, if you lose it, then how do you repair it? And how do you show them how to take the next steps in those moments where maybe you don't make the best choice is just as important as well. So awesome. Love that. Okay. Yeah. What's next?
Offering choices. And I say that with reason, of course, right? And this is a parenting tool also. I think we all have done this is, you know, you're offering maybe three choices that the students can do. Of course, you're okay with any of the ones that they select. And this is kind of a love and logic kind of procedure if you've ever gone through that training. But I think offering choices, and that falls in line with the idea that with the unpredictable and the chaos that they're ensuing in their lives, that they want to feel like they have ownership, that they have control over their life. And this just gives them an opportunity to do that. And the more we can offer choices, the absolute best situation it will be for the student. And that goes for adults. I mean, everything that we're talking about, I mean, you know, if a student went through trauma in their life, they're eventually going to grow up and they're going to have those scars, and the offering choices is great also if you're running a staff meeting. So I think anything that we're using here can be used both with students and with adults, but offering as many choices as possible throughout the class is going to be beneficial for you.
And I want to remind people what you said, offering choices you are okay with. You have to be okay with all three. Because we can offer a ton, but if you actually only want them to do two, well, then it loses its value because it, you know, when a kid picks the wrong choice, you're like, ooh, never mind. So making sure that whatever we give them is a true option that they can truly take and act on. And if we're not okay with it, it can't be on the table. So,
and it doesn't need to be 10 things. It can be two.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. All right. This has been really good. You got one more. Still got it in you?
I do.
All right.
I'm excited about this one because it kind of goes in line with what Andrew was talking about, which is don't cause additional trauma. So if you lose your cool, obviously you're going to have a negative situation. It's going to be something that is going to break down the relationship between the teacher and the student. And then you're potentially not going to be able to get back to where you were before. So I think it's coinciding with what you were talking about too, Katie, as far as modeling. You know, obviously, as an adult, we go through adverse situations all the time as a teacher, as a counselor, and an administrator. How are we going to go through that situation and model the appropriate thing? And if we do, let's say we do lose our cool, how are we modeling how to fix and repair that relationship so that the student knows what to do also in the future if that happens? So main thing is staying regulated. Just like in parenting, sometimes we as the adult need to take a break, get away from the situation, maybe do our own breathing exercises to then come back and be more efficient and effective. So just understand that our students are going through the fight, the flight, and the freeze behaviors if they go through an adverse situation, and we need to give them time. So yelling at them is probably not going to be very effective. We need to make sure that they are in a good state of mind, get out of those, you know, situations where they're feeling like they need to be in survival mode. And then we can start having those conversations, the teaching piece. Maybe it is, you know, these are the strategies that you could use. This is the behavior that's more effective moving forward, you know, and kind of having those reflective strategies. But I always give the example of like a kid running down the hallway that you don't have a relationship with, just yelling at them and maybe going after them and towering over them and having some of these negative both verbal and nonverbal behaviors is not going to help the situation. And if it's a kid that's gone through some trauma in their life, I can assure you that they're going to give you a very negative response. And then in that, you know, are we going to be the window? Or are we going to be the mirror? Are we going to let that behavior go through us and then communicate in the right way? Or are we going to then be giving them the exact same behaviors that they're giving us? So I just think as far as, you know, as an educator, it's our responsibility to make sure not only that we're modeling, but we're not causing additional trauma in the lives of our students.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Be a window, not a mirror. That's powerful.
Thank you.
Josh, this was, I mean, literally a jam-packed 20 some minutes, and you gave I feel like you honestly gave more than five strategies, because within the strategies, there were more strategies. But I think the big takeaway is being mindful that all students have some level of trauma. You may not always see it, but then also we have to be mindful of ourselves and our regulating in order to help others. And sometimes that is, you know, it's a hard pill to swallow to realize like we might be more of the problem, not the situation, and that we need to reflect. I might just be speaking to myself, but I think it's important to realize that it's okay to take that minute to show students how to model that behavior, whether it's the reactive in the moment or our next steps going forward, it's just as valuable. And it's important for students to see that we're humans too, but we are still continuing to grow and be better. And that's what we want from them. Because like you said, they're going to turn into adults. So,
yep.
Well, this has been amazing. And I'm so glad that we got to do this together. But Josh, if people are like, that Joshua Stamper kind of knows what he's talking about, I would love to do some work with him. What do you recommend?
Well, there is a link right there, right? Teachbetter.com/grants. And that's with the Teach Better team. Obviously, we talk a lot about restorative practices, social emotional learning. I mean, there's a lot of different components that we provide to districts. So obviously, Teach Better team plus Roma EdX has grants available for that. So yeah, definitely check that out. We love working with teachers and administrators all the time on this. I'm extremely passionate, as you can tell. I could talk for a lot longer about this topic. Just trying to, you know, do my best to provide strategies and find, you know, ways for adults to be able to work in these situations, because we can't control students, but we can control what we have to offer as adults with our strategies as far as communication or procedures with, you know, discipline and consequences. So it's a tough topic, but one that I love speaking on.
And you're great at it. So keep talking about it. Well, thank you so much for everybody who joined us in the comments, who are watching this later. As always, if you have any questions, you can reach out to either one of us. Our handles are below. Otherwise, it's joshua@teachbetter.com or katie@teachbetter.com. Or you can head to teachbetter.com/grants to figure out ways to get our team in your school or district to provide some professional development. So thank you so much for everybody who has joined us today. And till next time, see ya.